This is Football. I'm Kevin Clark. Thursday episode of Owners Meeting Week. We continue with the stacked episodes. Two NFL people who are really good on this one. Terry Fontenot, GM of the Atlanta Falcons. We go through the Kirk Cousins signing, some broader league trends, some watch talk. I really enjoyed this. Terry's a really smart guy. You'll enjoy this. And then Clark Hunt, the chairman, CEO, owner of the Kansas City Chiefs, joins me. Mahomes stories, Andy Reid stuff. Andy Reid's birthday is coming up. They're going to celebrate here in Orlando. We'll find out the gift. But also just some good football talk here. So here it is, ladies and gentlemen, Terry Fontenot. All right, Terry Fontenot, one of the best young GMs in football. One of the best GMs in football. You're only 43 years old.
Because when you put young in there, that's just kind of
completely... No, I know. I said it, and now it's like, oh, that's such a weird thing. There's not that many GMs who are young. And so I have to say, I have to just go broad.
One of the best GMs in the NFL with the tan jacket on right now.
Exactly right. Well, I mean, I'm kind of... I don't know. I guess I've run some fantasy football teams, that kind of thing. So we're both kind of wearing light jackets. I mean, it's spring. We're in the South. We can get away with whatever we want. You were just telling me a story about growing up and being tangentially around Eli, because you guys are in the same class in Louisiana.
Yeah.
Tell me about being near young Eli Manning.
Yeah, it was really cool. So Manning Passing Academy.
Of course.
When I was young, I grew up in Lake Charles, Louisiana, but it's back when it was done at Tulane University. Mm-hmm. Buddy Tevens was the head coach of Tulane, and again, young Eli Manning. And it's funny because I remember all his receivers, and I talked to some of those guys after that period, and they're all like lawyers and doctors, and none of them ended up playing past that point. Yeah. So it was a little bit different deal, but you could see it, man. He threw a very catchable ball, and it was really cool, man.
So what we're saying is Newman not a football factory one family.
And Odell.
And Odell.
Went there.
Excuse me.
So they've got some, obviously Arch Manning went there. So there's some good players, but a little bit different level with some of the talent surrounding those guys.
What makes Louisiana? So I'm from Central Florida, but I went to school in Miami, and I understand high school football in Florida. Louisiana is a different type of situation. And growing up around, and like a lot of guys who are GMs now, Veach grew up in Western Pennsylvania. Such a respect for the high school game there. Kind of understood how to scout from watching high school games there. It seems like there's a lot of respect, obviously, with Louisiana, with that high school situation. What makes Louisiana high school football different?
Yeah, it's the places I've been. So being in Louisiana and now being in Georgia, man. Just different levels.
Oh, my God.
Right?
Yes, yes.
Because I thought it was a certain level in Louisiana, and you get to grow up around some really good football, and it's a way of life. You know, it's not something you do. It's something you are. It's a part of you. It's a way of life, playing football growing up, and you see so much really good talent from a young age, mm-hmm. right? Youth sports all the way up and all the sports. It's a big deal. But, man, then I get to Georgia. I thought saw good. You get to Georgia, and the football that we're around now – and the youth sports and all the way up to high school, you talk about a different level. I mean, when I'm watching these 11, 12-year-olds mm-hmm. play football, because my son's that age and mm-hmm. I'm going to watch, they're doing things that you shouldn't be able to do at that mm-hmm. age. So it's just at a completely different level, and it is special.
A couple years ago, I was in the Packers locker room. Morgan Burnett was playing safety.
Mm-hmm.
And he grew up around Cam Newton. I was doing a Cam Newton story, mm-hmm. and I was like, hey, what's up with Cam Newton? And he said, oh, Cam Newton was my Pop Warner middle school running back. So, okay. And then he said, we had to split up. I had to go play high school quarterback. He had to play high school quarterback. And I was, oh, so were you two the best high school quarterbacks in Atlanta that year? He goes, no. I was like third or fourth. Number two was Eric Berry. And you're just like, wait a second. What the hell is going on in Atlanta?
It's crazy,
we have this hierarchy of like five NFL guys who are playing quarterback. Like Eric Berry? Jesus.
Yes. And it's really fun. One of my favorite things to do is watch high school football. It's fun to do, but then you don't know who these kids are going to end up being. My sophomore year again, growing up in Louisiana, we're playing Destrehan High.
Yep.
And we won the game, and we ended up, it was the quarterfinal, so mm-hmm. we made it to the semis, made it to the next round. And our quarterback, who, your stud, real good player, mm-hmm. and threw a couple interceptions, and he's a little frustrated after the game, but it was to Ed Reed, right? So the guy's pretty good. Like, don't worry about it. Shake it off, Russell. It's okay. It's Ed Reed. Russell
Wilson
in the medical
that.
Field. Ed
were,
Reed's the best to ever do it.
Oh, my God. I could not imagine playing against a young Ed Reed. I could not imagine. What a nightmare. All right, so you guys make one of the splashiest moves of the offseason, signing Kirk Cousins.
Yep.
I thought it was a terrific move because it unlocks so many different pieces on the offense. It obviously just gives you guys a floor. The first time, take me through the first time you guys decide to go pursue Kirk Cousins, and that was the route you were going to go instead of drafting quarterback. And obviously, listen, you keep your options open and say, okay, maybe we won't get Kirk or whatever. But like the first time you decided to get Kirk, tell me about it.
Yeah, so plan A, right, we get into the offseason. First, you got to hire the right head coach, and I believe we did that. Very excited about Raheem Morris. And then, obviously, the next thing you do is we got to improve this quarterback position, improve the quarterback play. We got to improve the whole team, as always, but we have to know this quarterback position. And so right away you dive in, you start looking at all the options. You really dig into the draft, and you go through that process even earlier than you would have done it, where the college staff has been doing it the entire time. But now let's get the coaches involved earlier. Let's get involved in this earlier, and you really dive into that. And you dive into the free agents and look at all the possibilities. Mm-hmm. And every plan has different variables and different nuances to it. And so you dive into it as much as you can. And it's a unique opportunity to be able to sign a known commodity, a player that has done it at that level. So you're always looking at the short term and the long term. So you have to weigh everything out. But we wanted to, as soon as we got that right head coach and as soon as we got that staff in place, let's really dive into this quarterback position, really evaluate the college guys, really evaluate the pro players that are going to be available, and let's find the right person, like you said, that who's going to be a multiplier, who's going to be able to come in here. And we do. We have a really good offensive line. We have some really good young pieces on offense. Who's going to really be able to be a multiplier and get the most out of all these players? And then again, it's a complimentary game, so you get the right quarterback. Trust me, the defense is going to be excited about that too. So unique opportunity.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the one thing I remember doing, first of all, coaches love Kirk Cousins. That's the most important thing because he can make the throws that are in the playbook. You know, like in, I think he, when he had, it was injured last year, he led the league in in-rhythm passing, which is next-gen stats says is 2.5 seconds to 4 seconds, just thin slicing. But as an example, just like in-rhythm passing and then throws over 10 yards. I think he had more touchdowns than anybody at the time of his injury. So it's like those are NFL throws. Yep. And I'm curious what you think. I mean, I think that there's been a discourse around Kirk. He's busy. He's gotten the contracts he has because he's never won a Super Bowl, all this stuff. That there's such a crazy discourse, especially online, about his value. I am a Kirk Cousins fan. Can you explain to me what Kirk Cousins does well from a schematic standpoint?
Yeah, well, like you said, it's a complimentary game, and so we have to make sure all those factors are right for things to go well. So we have to make sure the offensive line, the position players, all these things have to line up. But Kirk is, he's an extension of the coach. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about the brain, the processing, the throwing accuracy. Say those are probably the most important things with a quarterback. You know, there's a lot of guys that can do some different things, but those things that, hey, can you process, can you find the open guy, can you hit the open guy? Those are probably some of the most important things, and we think those things that he's pretty good at.
I think fantasy football players were going to revolt last year as far as just the skill guys and the quarterback play and all that stuff, and Kirk's going to certainly help them, and I want to go through it. We had Bijan on in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
He's an amazing person, first of all. Like, he's just a terrific interview, and the way he thinks about the game, the way he thinks about missed tackles, all that stuff. He also had a perfect bracket for the first. Did you see this the other day?
I did not know that.
David, did you see this the other day? The perfect bracket thing.
Yeah.
He was like one of like 148 people in the country to have a perfect bracket in the NCAA on the first day. So I don't know.
Perfect through the first 19.
Unbelievable. And
when you get around him, when you get around his family, I don't know if you've been around his grandparents, his mother, and his. So it's just all his cousins, everybody. It's just a really special family, and you get around them for a few minutes, and you expect them to have a perfect bracket.
Okay.
You know what I mean? You're like, this guy does so many things right that, man, he should get.
We should be like, disappointed he didn't get the second day right.
No
when
doubt.
You're around his grandparents,
no doubt.
His family.
You're around this guy, and like around him, like, okay, I totally get. Mm-hmm. How special he is and how special that family is.
So we'll start with Bijan. This offense will do what for Bijan?
Well, again, a complimentary game, right? So whenever your pass game is in rhythm and it's working and it's going well, then it's going to enhance the run game and vice versa, right? And not just Bijan, but Tyler Allgeier and the things he can do and some of the receivers and all the different things that those guys can do, getting the ball quick. So I think it'll really enhance. And look, we want our offense to be not something that you're just focusing on. You have to focus in a lot of different areas, whether you're talking about Drake or Kyle or Bijan or Darnell or all these guys. So you have to Rondell and Ray Ray. You have to really know, you're not going to know where that ball is going. It's going to change week to week. And so whether the fantasy guys may still be a little disappointed because you don't know who's going to have those special days, right? It's not going to be every week for Bijan or every week for this guy, because it's going to be, you want to, when that offense is really rolling, you don't know who's going to be the featured guy. And we believe that with Zach Robinson and with this offense, that we're going to be able to keep people off balance.
Raheem, obviously, I'll say this, probably don't want to comment on it, but obviously you guys are linked to a bunch of veteran coaches, Bill Belichick being one of them, and so much of that ended up being, I'm not talking about you guys in particular, like across the landscape, there were so many just reports of, oh, this guy's the leader of this, and just nothing ever developed, and it wasn't really real. Raheem, for you, was the choice. Why?
Man, Raheem was special throughout the whole process. 14 people that we actually did interviews with. And man, right when you meet him, and I didn't have a previous relationship with Raheem, you do a lot of research and you find out a lot of good things, and it really is valuable going through that whole process. There's so many different ways to do things. You learn a lot going through the process, right? But with Raheem, with what we needed, knowing what we needed, the right leader of men that was going to come in and have that infectious energy that was going to really go throughout the whole organization, and the football acumen, both sides of the ball, there's so many points that he hits, and when you meet him, you get it right away. Like, it's not close. And then every other step and every exposure, every time, the more time you spend with him, it just really continues to grow. So knowing our team well, because sometimes it depends on what building you're in and exactly what you need, right? What profile, what's the prototype for us? What are we looking for? And man, with Raheem, he just hit all those marks, so very excited.
I have an overly broad question, because I'm bad at this now. It seems like it's easier and harder to be a GM in 2024 than it ever has been. Here's what I mean by that. There's more information than there ever has been. There's more analytics. I used a in-rhythm throw stat earlier that could mean absolutely nothing, but it could be the unlocking thing for an offense if you use it the right way, right? And I'm curious how you navigate that, because the Saints, you know, Sean Payton, great example. He's somebody who is as old school as they come, but I know he uses analytics. I know he uses the next-gen stats, that kind of thing. And it's a blending of those two things. And I'm curious how you approach that, where it's, okay, we have all this analytic data, we have all this GPS data, and I want to ask some specific questions around that. But, like, the blending of those two things is how hard?
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and it can be difficult.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we had a meeting last Thursday with our analytics group, and there's some cool new things that we're saying, okay, this is really special, this can really help us. Okay, show me how.
Right?
Show me exactly, let's look at exactly how we're gonna apply this to this draft, and why are we gonna draft better players because of this? How is this gonna correlate to success? How are our free agency periods gonna be more, when we're evaluating players and when they come on the waiver wire, how is this going to help us identify better players? So that's what you always have to do. How is this going to be applicable for us right now? Exactly what is this going to do for us? How is this going to help the head coach on game day? Exactly how is it going to do it? And let's show it.
Right.
You know, because there's a lot of information. You got to filter through. You got to always look in the graveyard, right? We have to always, when we're looking at it, okay, this is really good. Okay. Have we seen it over a period of time? And, okay, it identified this player, but let's look at all the other players that it didn't. So it's really just really digging into it and seeing how we're going to apply it and how it's going to make us effective. It's all about, if we always go back to, it's about winning games. It's about winning football games. So how is this going to help us? It's going to help us find better players. How? And you got to keep asking that question. And when you identify those things that are going to help you, then you make sure you implement them.
Is there a thing I look at the gauntlet, I think drill it's called, where Puka Nacua runs a slower 40 than he runs it faster than anybody last year. This year, Keon Coleman did something very similar. Is there something, and that doesn't have to necessarily be at the combine, but it could be GPS reading, whatever. Is there something where you're just like, damn, I'm really glad we get to do this with technology now?
Well, it's important. We really ought to look at that, because you think about it, there's some players that didn't work out this year, you know. And we have to be prepared for maybe that's something that in the future, maybe a lot of players aren't going to be working out. And we have to, one thing we want to do is continue to stay ahead of things and how we measure those things. It comes down to the scouting, though, right? And we want to be around these guys as much as possible, because I guarantee you can find some guys that did the gauntlet pretty well and haven't been good football players.
Sure can.
And hadn't, you know, translated. So it comes down to the scouting in that part. But also we do have to make sure we find those measuring sticks, for because sometimes you're not going to have a 40 on a player. We didn't get a 40 on Drake, you know, but we had to really assess his play speed and see what we believed that he was going to be and project that. There's going to be some times that we're not going to get all those measurements on those players. So it's going to come down to the scouting, but we also have to be forward thinking and find ways to identify those things.
Do you think, like, Marvin Harrison Jr., I don't think anybody, the tape speaks for itself.
Yep.
And so the fact that he's not doing anything at Pro Days or Combine is one thing. I mean, he's going to still go top 6-7 in the draft no matter what happens.
Yep.
And so that doesn't matter. But you mentioned there might be a bit of a trend there. Are you thinking maybe in the next couple of years that more guys will say, I'm just not going to run the 40, I'm just not going to, a mixture of the tape and the GPS data speaks for itself? Do you think that's going to happen?
We always got to be prepared for that, you know. And you would hope that players always showed up and did everything and play in the All-Star games and do a pro day and do the combine, do all that stuff. You would love if that always happened, but you got to be prepared once you see one player not do something, you just don't know.
Yeah.
So you always have to be prepared for those things. And again, that's why our analytics departments and our scouting staff and the coaching staff, that's why we always want to be forward thinking in all those areas.
So we do something called one rep back, which is a play that you'd like to have back. And with coaches, it's play call. With a player, it's obviously the play there. With guys who have been in the front office, we love to do scouting reports, evals. Guys you missed with one way or the other. You've been a scout for a long time. I think you started with the Saints in 2003. The one guy in all your days of filing reports you missed on was who?
Whew. That's a good question, man. There's usually more than one. With most people, some guys would tell you there's one guy they missed on, but there's usually more than one. I'm going to think about it for a second, but man, you know what it always is? It's always makeup.
Mm.
It's always that. Like, if as soon as you start making excuses for a guy's makeup, something that he's missing or something that the type of teammate he is, because on the other end, when you didn't give a player a high enough grade or give him enough credit, it's because you didn't. He had some limiting factor physically,
right?
And so you say, I don't know about this or I don't know about that physically. But when they have the right makeup, they're wired the right way, they got the right ethos, man, they're gonna be able to take off and be a good player. So I'll think of somebody in a second, because there's plenty of them, right? There's always a lot of them with all of us. But it's always when you watch a guy, you really like him, but man, he didn't quite, the 40 wasn't fast enough, right? Or you really like him, but the arm's not strong enough, or there's some physical limitation, but you see that he's a good football player.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to just, when you see they're good football players, take good football players and deal with the limitations they have. Because when you don't, when you see all these physical traits and it's not translating necessarily to the field, right? But you start making excuses and you think you're gonna make them better, that's usually when you have those big misses. It comes down to the makeup.
Can you give me an example of, not a player, but just a genre of player where the makeup you feel good about? Like, how do you scout for good makeup?
Yeah, it's every touch point, right? So it starts with the boots on the ground area scout, right? Because they're in the schools, they're getting all the information from everybody, not just from the position coach or the pro liaison, but they're going to the trainers, the lady in the cafeteria, the people that clean up at night. They're going to every area and really figuring that part out, right? And then you look at the tape and how do they play? Do they finish? Are they good teammates? All those things. So you gather all that information. Mm-hmm. Now you start getting the coaches involved and all those exposures, all those touch points that we hit, and we just put all that information together to confirm that. Because if somebody at the school says they're smart but they make dumb mistakes on the field, or if they say that they're hard workers but we see a lazy player on the field, you have to take all those touch points and take all that information and put it together and make sure they fit what you're looking for. They fit that ethos. So it's not just one particular thing, it's the whole picture. It's the whole picture.
All right, so we do something called badasses, which is the most badass person you've ever been around in football. Just basically, and you can take a second to think about it, a lot of people do, but if an alien comes down and says, take me to a football player, you know, the guy who's the toughest, the guy who hits the hardest, the guy who plays through whatever might be ailing him, that you've ever been around in football, where are you going with that?
Man, so one of the first players I was around when I was working in community affairs with the Saints was LeCharles Bentley. Mm. And I say his name because he was just texting me because he's actually working with players. He trains players now with an agency and all that stuff. And so he's a nice guy right now, and he has, man, he wasn't before. and I remember I was supposed to bring him to an event or something. He was so mean to me. I was just this little intern, and he was just the meanest dude in the world, but he was mean on the field too. That's just kind of who he was, and I always give him a hard time about that. Like, dude, you were so mean back then. You were just a mean guy, you know, but he actually was, and he was on the field. But then you have some of the guys that you're around that are like Calais Campbell.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I mean, he's the animal that he is on the field, but you talk about the gentlest giant and just the nicest, kindest human being, like a sweet, kind human being, just in the norm, like when you're just here, but then completely flips the switch and tries to kill people on the field, you know? So I've been around those guys that can flip the switch, but some of them don't. They just mean all the time, like LeCharles was.
I went to college with Calais. He's my Eli Manning.
To college with him?
I did, yeah. Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer.
Yes. Not even close.
And he's so underappreciated, never talked about nationally.
Yep.
He's unbelievable. Yep. What makes him good?
Man, it's just everything about him. You know, I saw him this year and the way he approached the game and his constant after practice, and it was just cool for the players to get to be around him. And as much as he works on technique and works on the little nuances in the game, excuse me, and works with other players around him, he wants to make people around him better. He's the ultimate teammate. Like, he's the ultimate teammate. And when the game starts, man, he is violent, physical, aggressive, someone that can flip the switch like that, but then be the ultimate teammate throughout the week. You can tell he's someone that doesn't just love game day. He loves the entire process and everything that's involved, including the offseason. So, and to be able to do that consistently for that long in your career and to still do it, I mean, what he did this year, he had one of the more productive years over the last several seasons that he's had. And so he shows that he can continue to sustain that ability. So I would say his consistent approach to every aspect of the game, to his body, to what he does in the offseason to take care of his body. And when he's telling me the different things that he does during the season or doesn't do during the season for his body, I'm looking at myself in the mirror and saying, how can I be a better GM by changing what I do in my lifestyle? You know what I mean? So he is just his consistent approach and the consistency day to day.
You came up with a Saints team that was just rolling. From 2006 on, it was a machine. The offense was always good. Even when, I think there was a stat, when Breeze was out, they like were multiple games over 500 because of the offense and the way it was built. Curious now, looking back on it, quarterback, obviously retired, coach elsewhere. The number one thing you learned about football from that era of Saints football, from Sean, from Drew, from everybody, was what?
Yeah, well Drew was pretty good. We had the right quarterback. That kind of means something, right? Yep. So he enhanced a lot of people around him. But kind of like what we were talking about earlier, when you don't know who that particular person is, like you don't know whether receiver, running back, you have a lot of good pieces and you can focus on this and then we'll take this away, and you can focus on that and we'll take this away. So matchup football, and you can get in the game, and if the defense says, hey, we're going to completely take this guy out of the game, okay, well, we're just going to beat you with this. And so it was always that, and it was ever-evolving, the changes made during the game. So the quarterback was important, the fact that you could use a lot of different weapons on offense, but just the mindset as well. Hey, it was every game can be different, and we're going to figure out a way to win this mm-hmm. game, right? The approach during the week, and everybody in that building is doing everything they can do to get prepared to win this football game. Winning is the most important thing, and let's do everything we can do to figure out a way to win this game.
Did you think of a scouting report you want back?
Like, why would you make me do that? You take me through some dark times.
You,
man.
The guy you were like, I don't know about this guy, and then he just balls out the next year.
Let me think about it.
You got one.
Minutes, man. I do. It's those guys that it always comes down to that. The makeup and the ones that you know that.
Yeah.
Why would you make me do this, man? Why do you want to take me to these dark places where I'm not?
It's a learning experience. I'm just trying to make you a better GM, Terry. What kind of watch do you have on?
So this is I bought myself this as a present this summer, this off season. I bought my wife one too, and so I bought. But it's a Rolex. You got the, you know.
Datejust.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's not as nice as yours.
It's not as nice, but
what are you about to say?
Can I have this? Can I have this? That's what I was gonna ask.
Can I have it?
Like, we've had a great interview.
You didn't give
me the scouting report answer, so like,
we're gonna make some kind of deal. And then something, like, if something happens, then I'll just...
There'd have to be a pretty substantial deal for that, like, to go this way. Yeah. I just thought you were a good guy. I thought we were gelling, and I thought maybe...
I'd rather trade in,
as they say in the NBA, serious cash considerations if there's a trade going in either way here.
Can I have it?
I'm just asking questions. All right, we'll be back with Clark Hunt after this. Why should you bet with Caesars Sportsbook? Two words, Caesars Rewards. Every bet brings you closer to the types of benefits only Caesars can offer. Hotel stays, VIP experiences, sports and concert tickets, and more. It's not just an app, it's an empire. 21 and up, must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Maryland, Massachusetts, Michigan, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Wyoming, or Washington, D.C. Sports betting is void in Georgia, Hawaii, Utah, and other states where prohibited. Know when to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Ohio, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537. Or Maryland, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. Or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, D.C., Nevada, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harrah's, New Orleans. Massachusetts, if you or a loved one is experiencing problems with gambling, please call 1-800-327-5050. Or visit gamblinghelplinema.org for 24/7 support. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. New York, call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. All right, Clark Hunt, chairman of the Kansas City Chiefs. What's going on, Clark?
We're just here at the league meeting. It's always an exciting time, fun to get together, discuss some rule changes for the upcoming season. Always enjoy seeing everybody from around the league. And, of course, when you win the Super Bowl, it's
even more special. I was going to say, is there a victory lap? Is there like a
Everybody's very thoughtful, very nice, in congratulating you. So it's a lot of fun.
You were saying you're going to celebrate Andy Reid's birthday soon. What's the gift when Andy Reid wins a Super Bowl? You're celebrating in person here at the owners' meeting. Like, what's the Andy Reid birthday gift?
Well, I think his favorite gift is the chocolate cake
that
he gets on his birthday. But we've got a little tradition, the Chiefs, of some special watches that he and the other leadership team get from me.
We did. So Terry Fontenot, who's the Falcons GM, he was in this room last night, and we were doing watch collection stuff. So that'll be – I cannot believe the theme of watches is just going through every episode we're doing this week. So we were talking about the first time you and I met, which was in 20 – it was the year after – it was in 2012. And I drove through Mobile, Alabama to meet you in Dallas. And the first thing we talked about was you hiring Andy Reid and the process that led to that, that you know, why he sold you, you sold him, all of that stuff. And I want to start there with Andy. The thing that we don't know about Andy Reid that you do, just being in the facility every day, is what?
That from the moment he walked into our building, he completely changed the culture.
Sure.
And that was the reboot that we need. If you look back at that 2013 team, we had some pretty good talent on it.
Yep.
We'd had a bunch of guys who made the Pro Bowl the year before, but we just weren't being successful. And Andy literally came in and overnight changed the culture. We start off that season winning 9 straight games, which was amazing for a team that had won a couple games the year before. And it's been nothing but up since. He's amazing, and I'm so happy that he's established and confirmed the fact that he's one of the greatest coaches ever in the history of the National Football League.
Take me through what changing the culture means. Like, what – I think a bunch of teams just hired a coach a couple months ago, and everybody says they're a culture changer. Everybody's opening press conference, oh, here we go, we're going to change it. Like, what did that mean for Andy specifically?
I think it was getting everybody on the same page.
Sure.
So that's players and coaches. Mm-hmm. that if you're part of the Kansas City Chiefs, everybody's here for a common goal. This is not a place where you need to be thinking a lot about yourself. You've got to be thinking a lot about the team, and there's a high expectation, right? We expect to win, and you're expected to be a contributing part of that.
Everybody has a different story about when they started to watch Patrick Mahomes, and I remember I think it was Mike Kafka said there was, you know, one Texas Tech game on one time on a Saturday, and people started looking at it like that, and there's all sorts of that. The first time you heard the name Patrick Mahomes was when?
I heard it from our GM, Brett Veach, who wasn't the GM at the time. but he and John Dorsey, who was our general manager, had me come in and watch some tape. They wanted to show me a little bit why they were so intrigued with Patrick, and they showed me, you know, some of his games in college where he had over 600 yards passing, and, you know, was running to to his left and, you know, throwing 50 yards, you know, downfield, things that you were not supposed to be able to do.
Yeah, and then that year starts, you know, everybody talks about the practice and stuff like that. When did you know he was going to be the franchise quarterback? When did you know? I mean, obviously, no one knows you're going to be sitting there with another Lombardi, you know, 5 years from now and all that stuff. But you start to see when you say, okay, this guy's, we're actually going to not only win, we're going to win a lot, and we're going to change this franchise with this guy.
Yeah. Well, I'd mentioned two things. I don't think we knew quite at that point that he was going to be the quarterback that he was, but his rookie year when he was a backup, he sat behind Alex Smith. Brett Veach would periodically send me clips of Patrick in practice, including no-look passes. And I had to call Patrick, I had to call Brett and say, what's a no-look pass? I mean, I know what it is in basketball, but it doesn't really exist in football. He's like, yeah, it does. Watch the clip. And sure enough, in practice, he'd be looking this way and throwing that way. And of course, when he started playing the next season, that's exactly what we saw from him. I remember the beginning of that 2018 season. We went to Pittsburgh, a place where we had lost so many games, usually by double digits when we went up there. And Patrick goes up there and throws for three or four touchdowns. We absolutely light them up. Then the next week, we're out playing the Chargers, and he has another big game. And it was sort of at that moment that I knew he was going to be pretty special.
Sustained success is the hardest thing in sports, in life, like in anything. It's really easy to win one Super Bowl. I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. It's easier to win one Super Bowl than three. Yeah. But obviously, there are teams that can have one-year spikes, or, hey, we went all in on this year, and then we, you know, made a couple trades and all that stuff. Sustained success is different. When you win one and you set out, and you guys have done it in so many different ways, with certain stars, without certain stars, after you win one, like, what was the plan? And obviously it starts with Andy and Brett and all that stuff, but what was the plan to actually have sustained success that, like, we've seen, and what has been the key to that from the inside?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think you've got to have the right coach, which we do with Andy, and he's got a tremendous staff. And then having a young quarterback, a young franchise quarterback that you can build the team around. And Brett's done a fantastic job of that. And you've got to be willing to live through some change, right? You can't hang on to the same group of players. In fact, this year's Super Bowl team, I think we had seven or eight players who were maybe on the active roster just 5 years before. Just to show you how it turns over. And Brett's been very adept at making those hard judgments on, you know, letting some guys go, whether it's through free agency or trades, and then doing a fantastic job of replacing them by drafting well. I think if you don't draft well, it's very hard to be successful in the National Football League, and it's particularly hard to be successful year in, year out.
Give me, when you're thinking back on it in 40 years, give me the moment from this Super Bowl that you're going to remember the most.
Boy, it was such a close game.
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, watching it, you have the full range of emotions. I'm probably going to remember the incomplete third down pass by the 49ers. Yes. Where they didn't score a touchdown despite having two receivers open, Chris Jones, that they decided not to block him for whatever reason, and he got in on Brock Purdy pretty quickly and forced an incomplete pass. That was a pivotal play in the game and really, you know, I think opened the door for us.
Don't give away a scheme, but I think teams should try to block Chris Jones from now on.
Yeah, it's well, it may be so hard to do that they gave up on
okay.
it.
Right? And then you were happy to pay a premium for Chris Jones after that to keep him in the fold.
That's right.
Did you even know, like, obviously you know the rules of overtime, but it's like, it just felt like, it was just uncharted waters. Have you ever been so nervous in those situations in the double overtime, almost in double overtime?
Yeah. Well, I think it was the first time we were living through the new overtime rules for playoff games. And I was thinking back to when we had passed the rules and trying to remember all the nuances to it. You know, one of the interesting ones was as the period was running down.
Right. Literally, like, I was like, I don't know what's about to happen. I was like, should they score here?
Yeah. I had a lot of people who were sitting with me were really concerned. I was like, I think I remember, us voting on the fact that the game continues.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you watch the body language of Patrick and in our offense and Andy, they knew what was going on and they were not in a rush.
Did you know Mahomes was going to score a touchdown? Patrick was going to score a touchdown?
Absolutely. Yeah. Our offense had heated up a little bit, and that was, Patrick in his element. One of the things all the great quarterbacks have is being able to be clutch in championship moments, and that was Patrick at his best.
All right, last thing for you. It might be the hardest, because you've been around the Chiefs, obviously, for a long time. You grew up in it. It's called badasses, and it's the most badass person you've ever been around. And if an alien, the way I always phrase it is, if an alien comes down and says, take me to the badass football player, take me to the guy who was always tough, who played through any ailment, who made the play when nobody else wanted to make it in 20 degree weather, you're going with what?
So I'm going to pick a surprise for you.
Please.
Kevin Ross, a DB, a small DB for the Chiefs back in the 90s. And he played on some great teams, coached by Marty Schottenheimer. Sure. And I remember Coach Schottenheimer saying, look, if I ever end up in a dark alley by myself, the one person I want with me is Kevin Ross.
Oh, my gosh. And what kind of player was he?
He was a cornerback.
Yeah.
But he was an extremely tough cornerback despite his 5'9" frame.
Wow. All right, we'll get some clips. We'll get some YouTube clips. Wow, I didn't know that was off the board. I have to be honest with you, we've been doing this for a couple months now, and nobody's ever said a player I've never heard of. So that's a beautiful pull. Clark Hunt, thanks so much for coming on This Football Man.
Absolutely. My pleasure.